dumb. Too dumb. Too dumb. Tedium. Don't you dare. Twiddle dee dee. V. Evil elf. Evil. Oh, hi there. Didn't notice you. Sorry about that. I was just doing my vocal warm-ups. This is John Book, and you are listening to John Book's very own podcast. John Book. This is the second episode of my podcast. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about what's going on in my life, sharing another music review, and then later we are going to talk to Dustin Fancher about several things connected to the Olympics and having a discussion on the relationship between art and clarity. It should be interesting. But welcome, this is my second episode. I learned a lot from doing the first one. It took me forever to figure out how to get it online, but I did, and I'm semi-pleased with the results, but I think this week's just going to up the quality even more, so thanks for tuning in again. So what's going on here in Sheffield? Let's see. Well, my daughter, Nadia, she's 4.5 years old. She started school last week. She's going to a school that's just a 5-minute walk up the hill from our house, which is nice. It's a very steep hill, so in the rain and cold, which it does here quite frequently, it's not as fun, but seems like a really good school. We first got a tour of it a few weeks ago before school started, and that tour was good. It's a good facility. The lady who gave us the tour was very nice. There's one thing that did make me a little bit nervous. They had a big display of Olympic-themed stuff, at the center of which was a poster. And the poster had the name of the school across the top. Across the bottom, it said, London, 2012 Olympics. And the picture on the poster was a picture of two speed skaters. So that was a bit weird. I thought, speed skaters, that's not really the right Olympics. But her experience so far has been good. She's a little bit precocious sometimes. Sometimes when you ask her how school is, she answers, it's kind of weird. Not sure what she means by that. And then we had a sitter last week, and sitter asked her how school was. She said, it's a lot of work. Everybody there wants to be my friend, and that's the hard work. It's kind of frustrating. I hope that's not how I talk. Anyway, she's not picking that up for me. That's one thing. What else? Well, I've known this for a long time, but you don't know it, so I'm going to act like it's new revelation. One thing I've just recently learned about myself is that I am kind of a sucker for food sold outdoors. If you back it up a little bit, I'm kind of a sucker for food in general, but if you're selling food from a stall of some sort, like at a farmer's market, I am much more likely to buy it than if I saw the same item on a menu in a restaurant. And Sheffield has quite frequent outdoor market type events, and I always want to go spend lots and lots of money there, even though it's often the same things 4 or 5 times a year. Love the paella stand. What else do we get? Oh, we always get these French mushrooms and potatoes, macaroons. But last week we were there walking around, and walked past one of the Italian stands. They have several Italian stands, and this one was focusing on Italian sweets, and kind of stopped because I noticed that they had authentic looking cannolis. You know, we learned when we went to Italy that from these two Sicilian brothers, that there are two kinds of cannolis, or tourist cannolis. Most people have only ever tried tourist cannolis, little cannolis with not real cream made for the tourists. But then there's the big, real cannolis with ricotta and all of this. Well, these cannolis looked real, so I was kind of eyeing them and noticed that the two salesmen were kind of talking in their Italian accents and calling down people on the street to come buy their product. They were being pretty aggressive about it, so I thought, I'll just buy one. £2. Not bad. Bought a cannoli. My wife comes around, she eyes it, she's looking at everything, and he just kind of starts talking to us. And I thought, wait a second. I actually said this. I said, wait a second. Are you Irish or Italian? And he kind of drew breath and looked around and said, oops. Winked. Yeah, he was Irish. Not actually Italian. At that point, he switched to a Spanish accent just to show us that he could. Started trying to get people to buy his stuff in a Spanish accent. Asked him if he could do Russian. He could, but he was actually just Irish. So that was pretty funny. Guess you can never really know if you can trust a guy selling food from a booth, which is unfortunate, because I love it. What else is going on? Well, one thing I'm really learning these days, I feel like God's been trying to teach me, is the proper balance between work and rest. My natural personality is just to get as much work done as possible in a span of time, and I'm not particularly good at stopping sometimes. It takes me a while to unwind, and I feel like I need a really large chunk of time to rest. So if it's a Sabbath day, that means I might need 6-7 hours without any, you know, kids or anything to really feel like I'm getting what I need, and that's hard to do, so I just don't try sometimes. God's been teaching me that balance. I want to work hard, but I also want to rest well. And so I'm learning how to do that. That's really good. Scheduled in personal retreats and family time, and just planning it in and scheduling it is a huge part of it. What else I'm learning? Oh, I'm learning also about simplicity. I feel like God wants to bring me on a journey of learning to be simpler. Now, decided not to jump in head first, but to kind of ease myself into the water. So for this month, my step towards simplicity is that I am getting rid of fancy ketchup. I'm going to be fasting entirely from fancy ketchup. No more fancy ketchup for me, just the common blue-collar B-grade ketchup. I mean, who really needs the fancy ketchup anyway? It's just kind of a luxury that, you know, most people don't have. And I mean, when I go to McDonald's or whatever and they're like, what do you want? I'm like, oh, I'll have a quarter pounder. And can you just put regular ketchup on there? Please just hold the fancy ketchup, okay? And yeah, I'm not actually welcome at that McDonald's anymore. Not really sure what happened. They don't seem to like me very much. Anyway, next up, Dustin Fancher. Tuck me and then said, no, I did not. Man, stop. I wasn't bothered, thought you were busy. A city's tall and thought you must have missed me. So I live with a lie, bragging about this cat who does the biggest shows and we're hanging when he's back. But it's fabrication, so if you get massive, it's imagination. Okay, my guest for conversations today is a really great guy. He is one of the leaders here at our church, does the finances, he leads the young professional ministry, helps out with the training school, and he's privileged enough to be one of my best friends. This is Dustin Fancher. Hey, Dustin.
Hello.
How's it going?
It's going well. How are you?
Doing well. It's cold today.
It is.
So just a couple of weeks ago, the Olympics finished up. I don't know how many people are aware, but the Paralympics happened about a week or so after the original Olympics finished, and that stopped on, I think, September 9th. What was it like here being during the Olympics?
It was pretty incredible to be here for that. The British culture is not often very patriotic, but they were incredibly patriotic and got behind Team GB and Team Paralympics.
It seemed to really change the atmosphere and the mood in the whole country, I think. It was, like, really amazing to see. One of the main victors for Team GB was from Sheffield, and, like, her picture is now everywhere. Jessica Innes. What was she in?
She was in the heptathlon.
Yeah. She won the gold, right? Did she world record?
I don't think it was a world record.
What was the deal with the gold mailboxes? I mean, there's a gold mailbox now.
Right. So every hometown of a gold medalist who was from Britain got one of the traditionally red mailboxes painted gold.
And it was really funny. I think probably still sometimes it's happening, but the 2 or 3 weeks after the Olympics, every day I would go by there in the afternoon, there'd be a whole queue of people waiting to take their picture. Sometimes there was people there from a different charity with a gold torch, like a gold Olympic torch that they could hold and take their picture with it. It's really, really weird.
Yes. Sadly, that, as corny as it sounds, is something that Julie and I are still hoping to do at some point in the near future.
With the torch?
No, because the torch isn't always there, but right. We want to you know, just document that we were here during this time.
Oh, yeah. I don't think that's corny at all. I read this really interesting editorial in Time magazine But they were talking about how the Chinese Olympics, the Beijing Olympics from 4 years ago, were really impressive. They were like, the ceremonies and everything were meant to kind of strike a note of awe. But that the Great Britain, the London Olympics, had like a really, really communal aspect to them. Like, everyone was congratulated, you know, the women from different countries who'd never had women compete. And like, talk about the Paralympics. I mean, it was amazing this year.
Right, yeah, the Paralympics, this is the first time it ever sold out or even come close to selling out.
Yeah, I think like 2.4 million tickets or something like that.
Right.
Pre-sold.
Right. So, and the Paralympics began in Britain in the late 40s. So in a way, it was sort of coming home. And I think in a lot of ways, the British culture is very sort of accepting of people with disabilities in a way that other nations aren't.
Yeah.
So it seems like a good fit for the UK.
Yeah, you guys went to a Paralympics athletics event.
We did. We did. We got to see several amazing events.
Okay. You got to tell the story of that race.
Okay. Right. So men's 1500 meter. I forget which class it is. There's different classes for different levels of disability. This was an amputee class, but I think it was arm amputations. There was one guy that was from Djibouti that you could tell was, even before the race, not quite up to the standard of the other runners.
And I actually read that he was the first ever Paralympian from Djibouti.
The first? I didn't know that. Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the race started, and he immediately fell to the back of the pack and immediately lost the pack. The rest of the pack finished the 1500 meter in less than 4 minutes, which is pretty respectable. That's not quite Olympic pace, but it's not far off. But then this man from Djibouti, it took him nearly 11 minutes to finish the 1500 meter.
So he got lapped.
Yeah, he got lapped twice on a race that's less than four laps around the track. But what was amazing was to see the response of the crowd. So there's 80,000 people in the stadium. And on his second to last lap, which now everyone is watching because there's nothing else to watch, as he passed by in the stands, that section of stands would just rise to their feet and applaud and cheer him on. And then on his last lap, with about 200 meters to go, the whole stadium is just going crazy for this guy. And I think it just showed the spirit of the British people and the Olympic spirit that's caught on here, that there was such a willingness to get behind someone that clearly had overcome something incredible and had performed well.
Yeah, so impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really fun. I'm a little bit sad that our only souvenir from this Olympics are three McDonald's toys. That they're actually really cool toys, but they are our last McDonald's toys that show the mascot. We've got a wheelchair racing, a trampoliner, and an archer.
We've been saving up for basically the whole time we've lived here, just a little bit each month, to be able to go to the Olympics. And then when we didn't win tickets to the Olympics, we actually were given a couple of tickets to the Paralympics, which is how we got to go. But because we had all this money saved up, we decided we were going to just really go for it. So we both got a t-shirt. Julie, I think, got two. And wasn't the cheapest day, but it was a lot of fun.
Awesome. Okay, there's something else I wanted to talk to you about. So, I mean, as you know, I really like music. but I really like music that moves me in some way, that speaks truth about the world. And over the last few months, a few different bands, and there's two artists that I'm thinking of specifically, came out with albums that I found to be completely inscrutable. Now, the new Me Without You, which is called 10 Stories, and the new Derek Webb, which is called CTRL, Control. Now, it's not like, you know, those guys were normally doing scripture songs, or like, you know, they were, you know what I'm saying? You've heard both those bands, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so they're like relatively artistic, and you have to think and explore what they're saying. But both of these albums, the Me Without You album, tells the story of a circus train that crashes in the first track in 1878, and then all of the circus animals talk to each other for the rest of the album.
Wow, that is obscure.
And it's very clearly meant to be symbolic, but I have no idea what. There's this whole song about hanging the elephant, and anyway, And then the Derek Webb album, I've since read a little bit more, so I know a little bit more about what he's going for. But the lyrics, I mean, I feel like usually he's somewhat controversial and is speaking truth about hard things. But this, I just don't get. So it got me to thinking, and so I just wanted to ask your thoughts on this. Maybe we can just have a conversation. What is there a responsibility of an artist to be clear in what he's trying to say? I'm speaking specifically of artists who are believers. Or is there room for... Because, you know, I mean, I hear some artists say, well, I didn't know what I was writing about either. It's just really up to the listener to interpret. I don't really get that. So what do you think?
I don't know. I think it asks a larger question to me of what is the purpose of art? Mm-hmm. And is art meant to communicate a message, or is it meant to stand on its own?
Yeah.
And I can see both sides of that argument, for sure. I think where it gets sticky is... when you talk about Christians creating art, but then within the church, there's almost this deeper need, it seems like, for the church has this expectation that there needs to be something communicated. And I wonder if that's true. I don't know. I can see both sides.
I think, you know, if you're called to be an artist, and I guess this is a different media, I guess music and like film and stuff is very different from a painting in some ways. In some ways it's similar, in some ways it's not. I think a lot of bad art and music has been produced by trying to start with the message first, or force the message, or kind of build things around, you know, the number of times you might say Jesus in an album or something like that.
Yeah.
And that's totally not what I'm talking about. And I don't think either of these guys have come anywhere close to falling guilty to that. But at the same time, if you're going to spend, you know, your life and your energy and your money producing something, I don't know if with the Holy Spirit there's meant to be collaboration in trying to say something or having a point, even if it's just like an act of beauty or whatever. Like Derek Webb's last project had no words. It was an instrumental built around the Lord's Prayer. But I loved it. I mean, it is a work of art, and there, if you just listened to it without knowing what it was, you wouldn't get a clear anything out of it. But I thought it was beautiful. This one just leaves me a little confused. I don't know. What do you think?
So did you feel like in these albums, not only did it lack a message, but it also lacked that sort of conveyance of beauty?
Hmm. Yeah, well, I'm not sure that Me Without You was meant to convey beauty. I'm not sure that's the main thing. but, you know, their last album had a lot of animal and vegetable metaphors as well. But I could get stuff out of it. They were poetic but straightforward enough that I could sort of figure out what was going on, and it caused me to think. I engaged with it. This I'm listening to, I'm like, it's kind of haunting music, but I don't really get where it's going or why we're talking about it or why we're singing about this. And I'd kind of like to. I don't know. Is that wrong?
No, I don't think it's wrong. I think, you know, people listen to music for a variety of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my wife and I are a classic example of differences in that of, you know, she loves music and can like pinpoint where she's heard something before, because the music in itself is sort of captivating to her. And I tend to listen to music more for the lyrics and for what it says.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. So I think there's even a preference in there somewhere.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm just trying to think of where, as an artist who's a Christian, where the responsibility with connecting with God as you make it, again, not to make it like cliched, but to convey what you're trying to convey, or at least to have a clear idea in your head what you're trying to convey. Maybe that's the difference. Maybe, you know, Derek Webb, he knew what he was trying to convey. If he went about it in a bit more hidden, esoteric way, then maybe that causes people to search it out more. I don't know. So he definitely knew what he was doing. I guess I have more of a problem with that. Like, I don't know what I'm trying to say. You figure it out.
Yeah, that seems just aimless.
yeah.
And I think... Yeah, often if you don't go into something with a plan, the thing you come out with won't be very good.
Well, I think there's a lot of music that people consider to be amazing where the artists just... I mean, I've read interviews with musicians who are like, yeah, I wrote these lyrics because they fit the rhythm of what we wanted to say, and I don't know what they're about.
Sure.
That to me doesn't... that doesn't move me as much, even though the music might be good.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and so, there's guys like Miles Davis who, you know, went in not knowing what they were doing at all, but knew where it was headed and managed to create something amazing.
Yeah, I mean, that's improvisation. That's a whole different that's a whole different ballgame. Yeah. Okay, well, now we've totally settled the relationship between art and clarity. Thank you, Dustin.
I'm not sure that we've said anything.
I know. We have settled it. And the answer was that I was right. Totally kidding. All right, as now always. It is time for our game. We are going to play Top of the Head. Woohoo!
Great.
All right, again, just as a reminder, in this game, we ask each other questions, and we have to give the answer that comes to the top of our head. Neither of us know what the other is going to ask. Would you like me to go first, or would you like to?
Go ahead.
All right. I'll start with a goofy one. Dustin, would you rather go a month without taking a shower or without cleaning your teeth in any way?
Shower, for sure. Yeah. I think eventually you just sort of get used to the fact that you stink, but I don't know if you ever get used to the fact that your teeth, like, stink.
Okay.
What's the best book you've ever read?
The Great Divorce by C.S. Lewis, and it's a tie. The Great Divorce by C.S. Lewis, and A Prayer for Owen Meany by John Irving. Be careful with that one, but I loved it.
Okay.
If you were made into a movie star, would you rather be an action hero, a bumbling comedy guy, or a musical star? Just those three.
If it's what I'd like to be, I think I'd probably like to be an action hero, but I think it's probably more likely that I'd be the bumbling, you know, comedy thing.
Dustin Sandler.
Oh.
Sorry.
Okay. If you had triplets on the way, what would you name them?
Why, God, why? No. I don't know. What are they, girls or boys?
It doesn't matter.
Why was my first answer, so I guess right, that's what they're named.
The Y's are gonna be confused a lot.
Yeah, well, I'd spell one W-H-Y and the other one would be like Y. It would be Chinese spelling.
Okay.
Top of your head. Okay, what tech do you wish you'd invented?
I think I'd probably go with like a Model T or something.
Ooh, a car.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, I think that, you know, obviously completely drastically changed history at a time when history was also always changing on its own a lot in other ways. So I don't know. It's just an incredibly significant moment.
Yeah. Okay. Do you have any more for me?
I do. How do you make the distinction between secular and sacred?
I don't make that distinction. For me, the distinction is it true or is it a lie?
Right. Okay.
Those are my categories. What's one thing in the Bible that you don't understand? I love this question. So I'm going to use it most weeks.
Okay. So Jesus is crucified, and then at that point, that's not the part I don't understand. But then at that point, the graves all sort of empty all over Jerusalem, and people just start walking around that have been dead for years. And I wonder, what were people thinking, and why did that happen?
And what happened to those people?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great question.
Okay, what's your favorite overseas story?
Favorite overseas story? I don't know. This isn't a story so much as I thought it was a really cool image. This is just the first thing that came to my head. So we were in Lebanon, and I was meant to be like filming and interviewing people and just getting a sense of the culture and videotaping it. And I found this one spot that I filmed and took a photograph of because it seemed to me to sum up Lebanon. And I just think it's just really funny. I was standing on a bridge, and underneath the bridge there were some Roman ruins that they were excavating. And then to the right of the bridge, the building to my right, was a building that was still covered in bullet holes, as some buildings still are in Lebanon. And then on the other side of the bridge, like behind the excavation, there was a mosque. And sticking out from behind the mosque was the steeple of a church. And then on the left side of the bridge was a TGI Fridays. And that seemed to me to sum up Lebanon somehow.
Wow, yeah.
All right, last one for you. If you could have asked Steve Jobs any one question, what would you have asked him? Top of the head.
Off the top of my head. I don't know. Did he feel like he ever found himself? Yeah, it seems like he spent most of his life kind of looking for himself, and it's unclear, I think, as to whether he was successful in that or not.
Good answer. Thank you, Dustin.
Thanks, John.
Up next, listener feedback and music review. Earlier in the show, you heard our sort of theme song, Benioff, by the late, great Ethan Durrell. And then after that, you heard Rumor Has It by hip-hop collective The King's Offspring. But just now, you were listening to Touch This Light by the rock band House of Heroes. I'd like to talk to you guys about House of Heroes for a while because I absolutely love them. And I'm convinced that if they didn't stand for the things they stood for, they might be one of the biggest rock bands on the planet right now. House of Heroes is on the Goatee label, that's Toby Mac's label. They've just released what I think is their fifth studio album, which this song is from, and the album is called Cold Hard Want. Their real breakthrough came with their third studio album, 2008's The End Is Not the End, which was just absolutely brilliant from top to bottom, and my choice for the best record of that year. Starting with The End Is Not the End, their last three albums have all been built around a theme. They've been cohesive albums, which I really appreciate. The End Is Not the End had a loose war theme going through it, especially World War II. The next album, Suburba, was built around the idea of life in the suburbs and the trials and temptations and victories and things that people experience there. And their new album, Cold Hard Want, has a theme I'll talk about in a minute. One thing I love about this band is even though they are a rock band, they have a great amount of diversity. Take The End Is Not the End as an album. Some of the songs are very sort of light and simple. There's one called Babies Are Red about a guy who's fallen in love with the communists. Some of them are very complex with a lot of tempo changes and key changes and ins and outs and not following traditional song structure. The first big single from The End Is Not the End was called In the Valley of the Dying Sun. And it had this very weird structure with a verse, a chorus, a verse, a chorus with a different melody, then four bridges with four different styles and tempos, followed by an outro that was only loosely connected to the rest of the song. It's a brilliant track. Lyrically, it was a really powerful album as well. I can highly recommend it. Suburba showcased their ability to weave in and out of their songs intricate vocal harmonies, and there's a lot of like sort of chants and whoa-oh-ohs like you heard in the preview of a couple minutes ago. In fact, they even released as a separate track that you could get, I think on their website, just the background vocals from the whole entire album. They do a lot of Beatles-esque sort of intricacies in the way that they sing. In fact, they did a Beatles EP once and covered three Beatles tracks, just almost straight-up covers, which is a bold thing to do, I think. And yeah, so from one song could sound very poppy, and then the next song could be very aggressive. The lyrics could be joyful, worshipful, introspective, tell complicated stories, and they really like to work in and out of a theme. So their new album is called Cold Hard Want. And I think the theme of this album is the middle class and the hunger in the middle class to succeed and reach something higher, and how often in reaching that goal, they actually trade away what's true and real for something that turns out to be false. The track that I'm about to play a clip of for you now is called Comfort Trap, and it's told from the point of view of a man who, at one point in his life, followed God, but he traded in that relationship with God for reaching sort of the American dream of comfort. It's one of their more aggressive songs, and rightfully so, because it tells sort of a despairing story. And this is Comfort Trap. Overall, I would say The End Is Not The End still remains their most amazing album, but this one comes a close second. Suburba would be third of the five. It didn't quite reach the heights of these other two, but it's still really good. Cold Hard Want is easily their most aggressive album, and in some ways their most experimental. And overall, I think House of Heroes plays like some sort of combination of Queen, elements of the Beatles, the Foo Fighters, but standing for something that's true and right. And one of their sort of hallmarks is they like to close their albums with an epic, hopeful last track. And Cold Hard One is no exception. I'm going to play you a clip here of I Am a Symbol, which, crank it up, people. This is worth it. Okay, seriously, people, House of Heroes. If you like rock music at all, please, if I could convince five of you to go buy their albums, listen to them over and over again until they're just in your skin, and then give them to everyone else, I feel like that would be worth it, because I love these guys and I want them to make it. Well, that brings us to the end of our podcast. I'm going to leave you with two things today. One is, if you have any feedback, I have an email, veryownpodcast@yahoo.com. That's veryownpodcast@yahoo.com. And in fact, we're going to have a question of the week. And this week's question is, what is inspiring you now? That is, what are you reading, watching, listening to? Who are you hanging out with that is bringing inspiration to you at this time in your life? And lastly, I just want to leave you with the celebrity quote of the week. And this week's celebrity quote comes courtesy of Madonna. In it she says, "Tom Cruise is a good person. I think he gets a raw deal. Just as I think the orphans in Malawi get a raw deal. Just as I think a lot of marginalized people get a raw deal." Yes, Tom Cruise is basically the same as the orphans in Malawi. So thanks for that, Madonna, and have a good week.